Welcome and thank you for standing by. Currently, all participants are on listen-only for the presentation. At the time of the question and answer session, please press star then one and record your name so we may introduce your question. Today's conference is being recorded. If anyone objects, they may disconnect. I'd like to turn the conference over to Brian Sinclair-James. Sir, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Brian Sinclair-James with the Department of Health and Human Services. I'll be conducting our section of the training this afternoon, but first I'd like to turn things over to Therese DeCaro here at the Office of Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this call. You know, we have a lot of work to do together between now and through September to have benefits and pricing information up on the website, the web portal, and I suspect that this isn't going to be an easy task for any of us, and we're going to need to work together, and I just want to, you know, let you know that we're prepared to work as hard as we can at this, and, you know, I want to just thank you again for, you know, the work that you did that got us to the July 1 launch, and I'm hoping that people find today's training helpful. You know, we certainly are prepared to provide, you know, follow-up Q&As or potentially even, you know, an additional training if we think over the course of the next couple days that's necessary. So I hope that, again, this is helpful, and thanks again. Back to Brian.
Thanks, Therese. I tell you what we're going to do today is go over the expectations for the portal release on October 1st. It's the data requirements for the September 3rd collection. And what you should be seeing if you're sitting in front of a computer right now is our first slide, which is the goal of the portal. As you all know, the PPACA, or the Affordable Care Act, was established, and one provision of it was that Health and Human Services would establish immediately a mechanism, including an Internet website, through which a resident of or small business in any state may identify affordable health insurance coverage options in that state. What we've done is put things together for July 1st as at a product level collection so that we could move forward. But the statutory basis of this collection is established both by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and if you haven't had a chance to look at it yet, you can always go out in the Federal Register to look at the actual, IFR, as we call it, or Interim Final Rule. Thank you, Gary. And the information is there on your screen. This will be going out on the website as well, and I'll let you know where you can go for additional information at the end. Today's training, what I want to do is discuss what we're collecting for the October release. In part, this involves a refresh of the product information. The vast majority of you have already gone in and entered information on that. There are a few minor changes to the form that we're using. We've tried to respond to some of your concerns and some of other people's concerns, so I'll address that. Additionally, though, and I think what's going to be of most interest to everyone, is how we'll be collecting the additional information on portal plans, i.e., the information with benefits and pricing that consumers will be able to use to go out and potentially contact you to enter into business with you. After I've done kind of a basic presentation, I'm then going to turn over the presentation to David Cadero. He is with the contractor doing the actual data collection. The contractor chosen for this is eHealth. I know many of you have an existing relationship with eHealth. We're hoping that that facilitates the transition of getting this information to us in a timely manner. I believe eHealth has done everything they can to try and simplify their process a little bit in order to make it happen so that we can get the information by September 3rd. And then finally, at the end, I'm going to go through What I'd like to do in terms of questions is we will take questions over the phone. If you do have additional questions, though, or comments, you can go ahead and use your online tool to submit those to us. We'll go ahead and address what we can at the end of the meeting. If you don't need an immediate answer, you can actually include your email address, and we'll try to get back to you. We do intend to have additional trainings. In fact, we will be setting up a training for next week to deal with some of the issues that aren't strictly, you know, website per se. There are a number of policy issues going on that are going to affect us. We're aware of that. We know that you have some questions concerning that. So if you can let us know what it is you want to talk about in future trainings, we'll go ahead and schedule the appropriate people to come by and get that set up for early next week. Okay? So let's begin talking about the product refresh. Most of you have already been out to what we call the HIOS tool, and for July you submitted the product information both for individual and small group major medical insurance products. This went very well. I think we had over 10,000 entries by companies by state. Over 13,000 different products were registered with us, which is amazingly close to what we anticipated. And so we're very pleased, and I hope you're very pleased. We've gotten a lot of feedback, including, you know, that this is not a normal government website, that we're actually useful to people, and that is very much due to the cooperation that you gave to us in terms of collecting the information to get out there for consumers. What we're really hoping for this time is that we're going to be able to give consumers the information that wasn't there, the stuff that they've been clamoring at the bit to get at. All of the information for the current products is information that we're continuing to collect. There are a couple of additional new fields, however, and these fields are actually in the portal as well. In the register. Okay, that we have as well. The first of these is we are going to ask you for the number of applications that you've gotten, and we do specify, we've got a set of documentation going out in terms of what we mean by these and more specificity. But ultimately, what we're looking for is in the last quarter that we think is a reasonable amount of time, in fact, the first quarter of this year, we're going to ask that you let us know how many applications came in. We're also going to ask for the number of applications which you rejected, and then the number to which you offered up ratings. I.e., you offered them premiums above the quoted base rates. I know this is information that many of you may not want to share in a direct form. We are actually in discussions about how best to incorporate this, but really the purpose behind this is to allow us to let consumers know just generally what the situation is regarding their opportunity to actually obtain that information. We want to give some indication of, you know, currently people with pre-existing conditions and other problems don't have any real guidance over whether this is something that they should apply for. And so really what we're trying to do is with the minimum approach and the minimum data gathering, give them some idea of what those plans might be. Beyond that, and in response to the questions that you've been asking us, we are going to be collecting SIRF numbers. In part, this is because we have been asked by the states to give them some ability to link back to the information. Our hope is that this will allow you to communicate better with the states, to answer their questions, and also to address your own. We've had, you know, we're hoping that this can become a useful tool that people can communicate back and forth in terms of what's available on the market, and that you can communicate with the insurance commissioners on as well. ACA implementation. And with this slide, I did want to just quickly address one of the issues that we know is going to be a concern. We know that in September, certain new rules are going into effect for the insurance products that are out there currently. These are being addressed in a number of ways as, you know, grandfather plans. With the grandfather plans, we have a variety of kind of rolled-in issues that are going into effect. We know that you are going to be closing certain blocks of business, some of which you've probably already entered into our tool. We know that you are going to be getting new products approved at the state level, and the issue for us is that the timing becomes complicated. We do ultimately intend that for any plans that we display, we will have the product level information. This is to make sure that we're coordinating and that we have some control in terms of making sure that what we're offering is actually approved for offer in the state. We are going to be releasing guidance on how best to handle this situation. But as new plans, if you are prepared to enter the plans that you will be releasing to the public after the changes that happen on September 23rd, we probably are going to be asking you to enter that information in so that we have it and we know we've got everything aligned moving forward for October 1st. So you may consider that you want to be able to enter that information into the tool. Okay, the portal plans. For those of you who were back with me in the initial training way back before July 1st, you'll remember that while products are the basic information that gets approved by the states, the portal plans is the combination of benefits and cost sharing before premium calculation, which would then go into a contract with the consumer. There are various terms that have been used by this. Many insurance companies do operate with online vendors currently or have their own comparison tools on their own websites, and essentially the concept that we're working with is the same. What we want is what you're offering to consumers where they can go out and request a premium quote that'll give them an idea of what they're actually confronting. Along with that, we are only asking that you present to us the open blocks, products that have been closed, that are not going to be on offer to the public. We're not asking that you give us the plan level information. As I mentioned, in the future, we're going to very specifically link to the reported products that we're collecting in the other data collection. This, I think, you know, it's really just our way of making sure that you're giving us the appropriate information and that we're reaching out and collecting the appropriate information. For October, you know, this may be a little tricky because we're not sure we have the full set of products that you're really going to be offering in October, but we will work with you to resolve that issue. For now, if you want to go in and look in the tool, you can actually enter information and get things in there. Not associations. We recognize that association plans actually account for a large percentage of the small group business in many states. We are working on the best way that we will be able to incorporate that information. You know, we don't want to leave associations out if they want to play in this space. We want to give them the ability to participate on an equal playing field. But there are a number of different issues that need to be addressed in order to make that happen. So for now, we're not actually going to be collecting the association plans, and we'll be talking with you further about what may be happening for next year's data collection. But for now, they are not included. And finally, of course, it is small, individual and small group. And when we talk about the individual and the small group markets, we are referring to the definitions that are in place in the state in which you're doing business. Finally, though, in terms of what you are required to provide us, it really is plans that account for more than 1% of your corporate enrollment for the market in that zip code. So if you have 1,000 customers in zip code 22007, then anything that accounts for more than 1% of that in that zip code could be represented in our tool. This is our ability to make sure that there's some constraints. We don't want to force you to list everything, but we do want to make sure that we're capturing those open blocks that represent a certain percentage of what's available to people. This is something that we've gotten from a variety of consumer groups, that we've gotten from a variety of political groups and interest groups, is they really want to see what's important out there. That's why we're putting this into a play. Elements requested. Quite frankly, there are going to be very few surprises for you here. We do want to give you the opportunity to provide corporate information that's appropriate for consumers. There was a little confusion early on in terms of, do we need to provide the legal name, the name that we're marketing under? We're going to much more clearly identify, you know, in this, for this instance, what we want is to capture the information that you want to present to consumers. We are no longer going to be displaying the product level information in the way it is now, where people can go out and just look at all the products. And so that's kind of our ability to kind of tap into whatever system we need to. For here, we want to capture what you want to tell the consumers, and we're going to actually give you the opportunity to give, like, a description of the corporation and that sort of thing. We do want to get tracking information. We are going to ask for the NAIC code, the SURF codes. We are going to ask for those HiOS IDs. We are going to want to be able to track back between the information that you're presenting to us on the plans and the official designation of those products. One change we've made to address some of your concerns is for the geographic coverage. We are going to be collecting this information by state, county, or zip code. So if you're tracking your offering areas by county, you're no longer going to have to go in and enter every zip code along that level. You can identify that you do it by county and then simply identify the counties. Beyond that, the standard benefits and cost sharing. If you're familiar with the eHealth tool that's currently in use, it's going to look very much like that. We're not making a whole lot of changes. It's very similar to the other vendor tools out there. Here in a moment, we'll have David kind of take you through how to enter data into the system. He'll be giving you some examples of the types of things we're trying to collect. And as questions emerge, we'll be available to answer those questions. But frankly, I think we've designed a system that's fairly open in terms of allowing you to answer the questions, but detailed enough so that we're getting a reasonable basis for comparison between the plans. Rating information is the same thing. If you've worked with a vendor or you've created your own comparison tool for your own website, it's going to all seem very familiar. The individual market, you know, we do have a set of templates that I think are fairly straightforward and are really going to make sense to you as you go through. For the small group, because there are so many different ways of doing it, what we have done is we've actually created three different templates. To be perfectly honest, we anticipate that this is not going to cover the different ways that ratings are actually calculated for all the different small group plans. We recognize that it's a difficult playing field. But with these three templates, we're asking you to choose which one makes the most sense for your plan and to give us your best estimate of the ratings that would go into those particular cells. If you would like to help us, and by all means, we would love additional help, we are allowing you to submit information about how you calculate rates and submit additional rating tables that you utilize. And what we'll do is work to identify where the commonalities are so that we can create additional templates that would allow for us to better capture the information specific to your plan for future iterations of the tool. Obviously, we're not going to be able to make this available for October, but we are dedicated to making sure that we're doing the best job we can for the small group market. Okay, from here I just want to give you some very basic dates. Obviously the training, we're rolling it out today, August 13th, 2010. I realize it's Friday the 13th, but you know, so far as things go, it's been relatively smooth. I need to let you know that we do actually have the portal to enter information for the portal plans is now open. So once we give you the URL, which David will do here in a moment, you'll be able to go out, create a login, and we are going to ask that for now you simply create one login per issuer per state. Okay? Our rationale for that is that we are going to be doing an amount of validation on the back end to make sure that we're able to capture this information, but we're keeping track of it, and we're not allowing anything unreasonable out there on the market. So we're going to ask that you create one login per issuer per state for the current time, but go out, look at the tool, submit information as you can. The help desk is only going to open, though, on Monday. We do have a phone number set up for you. We do have an email address set up for you, and I'll give you those in a moment. Those are going to open up on Monday. For any technical questions, we absolutely ask you to reach us through those lines. Those are people who've been specially trained by eHealth to work with you on their tool. Additionally, though, if you have policy information, some of you already have seen we have an email address for Beth Liu. That'll be available on our website as well. And so for things that cross over, for how does the policy affect what we're entering into the tool, you can reach us at that email as well. Obviously, if you reach out through us to the help desk, though, we'll be able to get you through that as well. They will be passing the information off to us, and we will be making sure we get the appropriate parties to address it. Do bear in mind that we are an implementation team for the portal. For broader policy questions or concerns, honestly, there are different avenues that you may want to reach out to that you may be aware of, and by all means, please do. And we'll try to address things as best we can. The deadline for submissions is absolutely September 3rd. It's a new process for us. We need to make sure we have that data in there so that we can get it put together, get it set up for the display, make sure that we're doing our best job to represent you as well as we can to consumers on October 1st. And October 1st, we will be going live. Okay? Additionally, though, for policy development, I'm sorry, I've been handed a note. Okay. Yeah, one issue, and this is getting back to the changes that are happening in terms of the fact that we're recognizing that new products are going to be coming out. If you do have new products, if you are going to be rolling out new products for October, we would like you to go ahead and enter that information into the product portal now, that HiOS tool that you've been using in the past. Thank you. For those products that are not open yet, go ahead and mark them as closed products. You can always go in at the appropriate time and indicate to us that they have now become open. So if you want to get that information in there earlier, and we are asking that you do because we really want to coordinate our data collection to make sure we're doing things right, go ahead, enter that information in as soon as it becomes available. Okay? We will be, I believe, opening the portal up on Monday, and you will be able to enter your information at that time. Okay? For support, and again, the first set of information you'll have already on the OSIO website and in the earlier slides, these are the phone number and the email address for assistance getting us your product level information. And then below that, you'll have the new information for the going live on Monday, where you can reach out for assistance in getting us your portal plan information. That phone number is 1-877-425-3708, and the email address is cmp-support ehealth.com. I know you're going to have questions at the end. I appreciate it, and we will be addressing those. But I'm going to ask you to bear with me for a moment while I turn things over to David Cordero. David is a longtime employee of eHealth, has worked very well. I think some of you may know him already in terms of incorporating the data into the tool. And so I'm going to turn over the slideshow to him. And is the operator on?
Yes, David's line is open.
Okay, then I'm going to mute, and David, it's off to you.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Can everybody see my screen? Is my screen up?
We can, David.
Oh, I'm sorry. What do I do? Show my screen.
Yeah. It's on there.
Can you see now?
We can, David.
You can, okay. So good morning, everybody, or really good afternoon, unless you're on the West Coast. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through the tool that we've created that we call the Content Management Portal, which is going to be the tool that all the issuers are going to use to communicate their plan data submission requirements. And what you're looking at now is the home page of what I'm Content Management Portal, which I'll call CMP. And at the end of this presentation, I'll be providing you with the URL that you can use to access this portal. I will mention that since we are looking at the screen, that we have added, if you look at the bottom of the screen, it says forgot your password. Well, there will be another link next to it that says register. And we'll talk a little more about registering, but basically issuers will come to this screen for the first time and they'll click on that register link and we'll ask a series of questions and collect some information, and the issuer will select a user ID and password, and then they'll immediately get access to the site. So the Content Management Portal is basically a secure site for issuers to log into to enter, as I said, their individual and small group data submission requirements. We've also developed a site to support the sharing of files between the issuers and the team that's going to be working to process the content. And later on, next month, we'll be rolling out a new functionality that after we go live on 10.1, there'll be a need to update the plan data, and we'll have functionality to do that. So that's still to come. So basically, there are seven sections that are going to need to be completed within the Content Management Portal. And I will, in the following screens, I will actually take you through each page briefly so that you're familiar. But the seven sections are, we're going to ask you to enter and identify your portal plans. We're going to ask you to enter your benefit information for each plan, provide rate and service area files, answer some rating questions that we need in order to be able to display your pricing appropriately based upon the consumers that are shopping. We're also going to ask that you provide us with some test cases so that after we've generated the rates, we can have something we can test against to make sure that we are, in fact, calculating the rates correctly. We're going to ask for your company logos, and there's two different size specifications that we will need, and these logos will be displayed on the website, as well as a company profile asking for various pieces of information about your company in a consistent format. And then the last page will be collecting contact information. So you'll need to click on the initial submission tab to get started, And the first thing we'll ask you to do is to identify all the plans that you're going to want us to put onto the site. And as Brian said, the requirement is for issuers to submit information on at least all portal plans that are open for enrollment effective 10-1, and that represent 1% or more of the issuer's total enrollment for that respective individual or small group market within that zip code. On this page, we're going to ask for each plan, the issuer's ID, product ID, plan name, type of plan, whether it's PPO, point of service, HMO, et cetera, effective and end date of the plan, basically the effective and end date of the rates for that plan, deductible, coinsurance, office visit, copay, member enrollment per plan for the last fiscal quarter, and the SERF number. The next page is the benefits and brochures. I'll just mention that the templates that we are using in the content management portal are all in Excel version 2003. And it's important that when working with those Excel files, you can download those files and share them internally within your area to those functional areas that may be completing the templates. For example, the benefits or rates, there may be a specific resource within your organization that needs to work on that. So there'll be the ability to take that template and send it to them for completion and then collect it and upload it to the site. But what's important to note is please do not change the version. Excel 2003 is what we have programmed our site to recognize, and any other version will not work. The benefit template, as I said, it will be in Excel, and I think a lot of you would be who currently are on the eHealth Insurance site will be very familiar with the template. We ask for several definitions of several benefit categories, and we provide a common way to provide those definitions where possible, so that one of the functionalities will be the ability for a consumer to compare plans, carrier plans, side by side, and we, to the extent possible, want to ensure that we're all saying the same thing the same way, although there is flexibility within these fields to add any notation or disclaimers that you feel are appropriate for the consumer to see at this level of the benefits. Also, we're going to ask for a PDF of your benefit brochures. At the bottom of this benefit pad that we're creating, we allow the consumer, or somewhere in the portal, we will allow the consumer to actually view the issuer's benefit brochure in case they're looking for more detailed information. The next page, we're going to be collecting rates. And when you click on the rate file link, we are going to ask a series of questions which will guide us in determining which standard rating template would be appropriate for you to complete. It will be an Excel template, and again, based on the responses to the questions we ask, we will serve up the correct version of that template. We're also going to ask you to provide us with your service area, and that will be in Excel as well. We are collecting your zip codes and counties, and if in your rating, for example, you have rating based on region, we have a column where you would identify what region those zip codes and counties apply to. So there would be three columns: region number, zip code, and county. We will also have an Excel sheet with several rating and eligibility questions that we need answered in order to ensure that we are quoting appropriately based upon the consumer that is looking for a quote. And we have one different template for a small group and another for the individual product. We will also provide you with an Excel spreadsheet where you can provide us with test cases that you would like us to run. We will run all of the test cases that you provide in order to check over our work. I will note at this point that you can rest assured that nothing will be authorized to move forward to the production live site until you have actually reviewed what we've developed. You'll be put on a QA site, and we will not move forward until you've reviewed all that information yourself and given us an approval. We also need to collect company logos, and we have the specifications for the sizes of those logos, and you would upload those here on the site. We have a company profile page, which I actually do not show here, but it's a common format where we basically ask the consumer to provide an overview of the company and tell us when the company was founded and how many, the size of membership base, whether you've received any awards, and there is some flexibility in what you can provide, but the intent is to provide the consumer with what we feel is appropriate information that would be useful to them in understanding more about the issuer and in a common format. And then finally, we have a last page where we're collecting the issuer's contact information. I will mention that at the very end, we ask for a data submission contact, and that would be the person who we really need to communicate with that will be responsible for coordinating all of the completion of the templates and the ultimate submission of the entire package. What's not shown is underneath at the very bottom, there's another contact that's asked for, a data validation contact, and that would be the individual who we need to communicate with when the plans are ready on the QA environment to review and provide us with an approval. It may very well be the same person as the data submission contact. You will see this is the last page of the flow, the site flow for the initial submission. And if you will see on the left-hand side, as you go through these pages, we will check off which pages have been completed. This is not something that can be completed within one day. So when you save your work and you return, you can see how the progress you've made and which sections have already been completed and which sections are still outstanding. Once all sections have been completed, you would hit that submit button at the very bottom of that column on the left-hand side. Hitting that submit button basically tells us that you are finished with the process. We will then have somebody review all the materials that have been submitted. The issuer will be locked out from making any further changes. If for some reason further changes, you missed something or wanted to provide some other information, you'd have to contact us for us to open that up for you to make those changes. So someone is going to review what you've submitted. Provided everything looks fine, it will be moved forward into the development cycle. It will be tracked by us very closely and tested, and then again, once we feel that we've developed everything and everything looks fine, we'll then be contacting that data validation contact person, providing them with a URL to a test environment so that they could see what their plans look like on the site, the benefits, and the pricing. This brings us to the next steps. I think it's worth mentioning what our recommendation is in terms of who should be accessing CMP. So we recommend that the issuer designate one data collection contact person to access CMP and coordinate the data collection internally. We're dealing with large volumes of, we're going to be dealing with large volumes of submission, and we feel that this is the best approach so that one person can coordinate within the internal organization to collect all the necessary templates, be the quote-unquote person that understands how to utilize a CMP, and then be the one person accountable in submitting the requirements. Now, for those carriers that are in multi-states, the CMP does provide functionality if the multi-state carrier feels that they can handle this with one single point of contact for all states, the CMP does provide the functionality to submit from multi-states. Or, in some cases, I believe some multi-state carriers may be will have a different point of contact within each state, which is fine. And even one step further, there may be a need to have one contact for the individual product and one contact for the small product. So as it relates to who should be coming to this login page and registering, we just want to make it clear that those are the general guidelines that we recommend. The data collection contact person will complete the registration process, log on to CMP with a user ID and password. Here is the URL that you can use to access the site. And as Brian said, the site is available as we speak, cmp.healthcare.gov/CMP. One of the things that I strongly recommend when you do get into the site for the first time, there will be a technical instructions document that we've posted. I would strongly recommend that you open that document and print it out and review it. It provides a lot more detail than we are providing on this call, including sample templates that have been completed and some frequent, what we believe will be some frequently asked questions. And again, as Brian mentioned, we do have an email that will come to us if you have any questions about the data collection process or how to use the content management portal, and an 800 number, which will be operational as of Monday. And that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you, David. Okay. I tell you what, at this point in time, what I'm going to do is collect, and I apologize, someone has collected them for me, but the questions that have been submitted through the chat function. But while we're compiling those, what I'd like to do, if the operator is available.
Thank you. Would you like to take the questions over the phone lines also?
I would indeed.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question on the phone line, please press star then one. You'll be prompted to record your name, so we may introduce your question. If you would like to withdraw a question, please press star then two. Once again, to ask a question on the phone lines, please press star then one. One moment for questions. At this time, we do have three questions on the phone lines. Did you want to start with those or with the ones you already have counted?
No, let's start with the ones on the line.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I'll open it up, but I did want to mention we've scheduled for another hour. We'll see how that goes, but if we need to take that, we certainly will. So please, the first question.
Thank you.
Mark Colmer with Regents.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, I have a couple of questions, actually. I noticed that on our contact company information, there was just one listing for customer service contacts, and at Regents we actually have separate customer service contacts for our individual and or our small group. Will there be the opportunity to provide separate numbers? And then the other question was on the plan information, you had a product ID, and I was wondering, is that the HIOS assigned product ID, or is that our own internal ID?
Right. The product ID question, you're correct. That is the HIOS product ID that you've been using. What we're trying to do is, of course, just be able to track back and make sense of things.
I can actually answer the first question.
Okay.
So there was one initial screen that I did not display. It's the very first screen that comes up when you click on the initial submission tab. And we basically ask, you know, what carrier you are and what states you're in, and then you will be asked if this is for the individual or the small group product. So basically, you will have to go through that flow for individual separately and then small groups separately, so the contact information would be different for each product.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Next question.
We do have a question from Meg. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I have a question about the brochure information. You had mentioned we have the ability to attach PDFs. We had done through the first phase, we had done URLs, which gave the brochure, the formularies, as well as the provider directories. Is that going to be the same setup? Do we have opportunity to give URLs?
You'll have the opportunity to give a URL for the formulary and for the physician directory search, but the way we've got this set up is for the benefits, we'd like to be able to post a PDF of your, you know, marketing plan brochure and have that locally on the site.
Okay. And Meg, some of that, again, that's the way we've got it set up for October. As you know, there are going to be a set of guidelines for information on different insurance plans. That information is under development, and so we know that, you know, things are going to change down the road, but for now, that's how we'd like to handle it for the October release. Okay. Next question.
Judith Graziani, California Society of CPAs Group Insurance Trust. Hello, thank you for taking my call. We are a California-based multiple employer welfare arrangement governed by the California Department of Insurance and ERISA. By law, we can only sell group plans to members of the California Society of CPAs firms. You spoke earlier of non-association plans, of not including association plans. And it gets a little confusing because by California law, or by law, we're not under AB 1672, we are not technically an association plan in California, but our license allows us only to sell to California CPA-owned firms. Would we be required to put this information into the system?
I think the answer to that is no, you are not required to do so. While for individual and small group, we are operating with the state definitions, but MEWAs and association plans are not included. Again, if membership in a given organization is a paid organization is required before membership can be issued, then I think, you know, and I apologize, this, you know, we will provide additional guidance. But in general, if you are a association plan or an MEWA, we are not requiring that you report at this time.
That's terrific. I thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have one more question.
Karen Early, Blue Cross of Idaho. Hi, my question has to do with the validation. There previously was a requirement that the CFO or CEO validate the data. and I'm not seeing anything on here. I just want to clarify and be sure that I understand that that requirement for validation no longer exists. Thank you.
That's a good question, actually. In terms of the detail of that, I don't think we've set it up. Give me just one moment. Yeah, I think, in fact, that, you know, the requirement for that is still going to be the same. I recognize that that's a little bit, you know, strenuous on some people, but really, you know, it's the only way for us to make sure that the data, you know, is the official data from your organization.
Our next question comes from Chris. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, and it's a follow-up from this last question. So how are you going to get certification or validation? What's that process going to be?
That's a great question, and obviously we've kind of been a little, well, I'll let David address this. Essentially, what we're doing is similar to the way we did it last time in terms of posting the information up so that you can see it. They can go through and do the attestation online. David, are there things that we need to expound on? Have I lost you, David? Are you on mute? Okay. I apologize. And if you're still on the line, did I answer that well enough?
Can we expect some more specifics maybe from the Q&As?
In fact, the technical information that we will be posting and I think sent out could have had that included. If not, I will make sure we address it. And by Monday, we should be able to put this information online for people. You know, bear with us a little bit in terms of, since we're working with a new contractor and establishing this, our first objective was to make sure that we got all, you know, given that we're the federal government, we have to go through a process of getting everything approved in terms of how we can present it. And so getting the looks and feel of all the different things developed is something that we may not have addressed for additional things moving on. But at this point, what we will do is make sure that we get it available for you on the
website. I'm sorry. We got disconnected. I'm back on. I apologize.
Okay. Did you want to contribute something additional to this, David?
I don't know what was discussed in the last 60 seconds, but the process for approving what we've developed and put onto the QA site will be basically getting an email back with an approval to move the plans forward. I don't know if that answers the question.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. With respect to SURF number, are you asking for the rate number or for the certificate number?
That is a good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer. It is a 14 characters long with four alphanumeric characters, a dash, and then the nine numerics.
I think that's the same for both.
Okay. Dwayne, can you answer that? Is Dwayne still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here. The question was a reference to the SURF number, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, the SURF number, the identifier we're using for HIOS, which we're also collecting SURF, is a 14-digit number, so it's a 4 alpha, a dash, and then a 9 numeric. So does that distinguish?
I think we have two numbers
because we file our rate separately from our certificate. We have one SURF number for the rate filing and a different SURF number for the certificate filing.
Gotcha.
I would assume,
I was going to say, Dwayne, let's not make assumptions at this point.
Yeah.
I think what we'll need to do is get you further guidance on Monday, Or if we can, we'll get it to you earlier. And quite honestly, any time I say Monday, what I mean is that's kind of our deadline to make sure we've got it in your hands. So if we can get it out sooner, we will. Yeah, and honestly, that's all I'm going to really be able to do at this point.
Okay, we'll look. This is in North Carolina, so okay. I don't know if you'll need to follow up with us specifically, or if you'll just post something on the Q&A.
No, we will definitely be using the Q&A out on the OSIO website. You can also, again, keep in mind that we're opening up those phone lines. They will have access to everything that we're making publicly available, and just given the way these things work, we'll have more details about specific things than we're able to put into the general information going out. So really, if you need a specific question answered, that's going to be your best bet, and we'll make sure we get to it as quickly as we can.
And then, if possible, I just have one more question. I was wondering if perhaps you or the vendor can clarify how using just one or two applications are going to accurately reflect the underwriting for each of the different insurance companies, given that our underwriting rules are proprietary?
We're actually not trying to reflect the actual underwriting. What we're trying to get at is the base rate. We recognize that consumers will end up with rates that are different from those that are being quoted online. We do not intend to represent those premiums as anyone's final premium, simply as a base rate that for a given plan.
Okay, so having not seen the info, it may be just premature to ask that. So it sounds like you're asking for our standard rate quotes.
That is correct.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, and I apologize if we didn't make that clear. No, we recognize we are not capturing underwriting, we are not trying to capture underwriting, and we're going to be having some discussions about how best to represent pricing on the website. The issue of underwriting, we're really trying to get through a couple of different ways because we know that is going to differ and change for people. But at this time, what we're talking about here are capturing those base rates.
Okay. Thank you.
Tamika Turner, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alabama.
Hi, Tamika.
Hi. We have one quick question in regards to the reporting you're going to require for applications, denials, and upgrades. How often is that, a monthly or quarterly thing?
It's quarterly.
Quarterly. Okay. Great.
And I apologize. I should have included in the slide. I've just done different preparatory documents, so I get confused, to be perfectly honest. For September, what we are going to be asking for are the numbers for the first quarter of 2010. So that's January, February, March.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Deb Trost. Deb, your line is open.
Hi. Thank you.
Of course.
Just to follow up on that question we just had immediately. The apps, denials, and upratings that you're talking about are purely for individual business, not group?
No, I don't think I can say that. We are trying to capture it for both, recognizing, obviously, that the small group information is going to be weird, all right? We're collecting this information in order to get an idea. We certainly have been thinking about it primarily in terms of how to adjust people's expectations relating to the individual market. But if there are a particular set of applications for small employer plans that have been either, that have come in, that have been rejected out of hand, obviously the uprating, I'm not sure that really makes a whole lot of sense in that, it may be all of the applications, but if that's the case, that would be the way to handle it.
Are these to be reported at the plan level, or is it someplace higher up in your website?
I'm sorry?
Will these numbers reported at the plan level?
At
a high level? Will you be splitting the group and the individual reporting?
No. Right now what we are doing is collecting it at the product level.
Okay, you're right. Your numbers are going to be very weird.
Yeah, no, we recognize that. For small group, they clearly are going to be. Really, this was kind of our attempt, given the current reg, to do the best job we can at representing the information.
Okay, because our small group products are guaranteed issue. There would be no denials.
Okay, well then.
What I did want to ask you was, on the existing website, our current products on the existing portal, there is a column there that asked, will they be available for purchase in phase two, i.e. after October 1? And not knowing where this was going, many of those we had reported, yes, they will be available after October 1st, but in fact they won't, because they're going to be grandfathered, they're going to be closed, they're going to be replaced by something else.
Right.
Can we change that indicator?
Yes, you can.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, no, in fact, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on that, no, you should go in and adjust that data for those plans. Again, we know that a number of things are going to be retired. We've talked to a few different people at the state level. We understand that this is our opportunity to go ahead and capture that information.
Okay.
Please, if a block is going to be closed, go in and indicate.
Okay, so then if we go into the existing portal and enter our new plan information for the things that actually will be available after October 1st, then that would get them the smart IDs assigned?
Correct.
Okay.
Right, but if they're not available until October 1, I mean,
uh-huh.
Going back to the point Brian was making, I mean, look, it helps this whole process if you get those products in to HIOS immediately. But if you aren't going to make those products available until October 1, you should display them, or you should enter the data as closed so that when they do the refresh for September 1, it doesn't come up. And then in the September window, you go in and you show them as open, but you will have given us your product information and you get your enumeration, and it makes the whole process of entering plans at the, you know, for the product much easier.
So you think it would be simpler to enter the new plan information for October in the current portal as closed, then switch it to open in September, and then re-enter all the information into the new portal?
Well, no. What she's indicating is that if you have a plan that is not currently open and is not going to be open in September,
uh-huh.
but it is going to be open in October, what we want you to do, what you know makes the most sense, what you should do, is go ahead, enter that information in, mark it as a closed block so that we don't represent it to consumers for September. But then come October, you're simply going to be able to check off, to uncheck the closed block field so that you don't have to double enter the information.
Right, and we're talking about products here. We're not talking
right.
about plans.
Right.
Because we won't be representing any plans until October 1.
Okay, so that tells me that you're going to be pulling the data from the current portal, some of it into the new one.
That is a fair assumption, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Barbara Friedman. Your line is open, Barbara.
Thank you. This is Barbara Friedman from Aetna. I have a couple of questions. Do we need to report and display plans that have participation requirements, such as small group mental health parity plans? And if so, do we include the qualifications or disclaimers associated with those plans?
I'm going to answer the second part of that first. We do, in fact, we have a field to collect information if there are additional requirements for membership or enrollment, health conditions as well as other, okay? So we are built to, so that we can incorporate that, you know, the gray area. We are still, though, intending to collect major medical. Okay, so if it is something that is only covering a certain set of conditions, then no, you should not report it. But if it is something where you know, it's just, you know, we're really trying to help out these particular sets of people, but it is not that they have to go out and join something in order to get it, then I think, yeah, you should enter that information. We want to make sure it's available to people. Does that answer make sense?
Yes. And will consumers be able to create and download a proposal directly from healthcare.gov, or will they be directed to the carrier site?
We're actually going to be directing them to the carrier site. We are not going to be able to automatically enroll or to provide automatic enrollment materials.
Thanks. Do you know, as far as dates and timing go, do we know what the testing windows are going to be for carriers, as well as any testing that eHealth is going to perform?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
What the timing is and the dates for carrier testing, as well as when eHealth is going to be testing. We saw that we do need to provide some sample data for eHealth to perform some testing.
Yeah, in fact, the timing is going to really roll. They are going to be notifying you when it is available. So it'll be loaded up actually to a test portal where you'll be able to see the rates. If you can provide, and the other information for validation and attestation, if you can provide us the sample data beforehand, then, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe what we're going to try to do is do some internal controls when we first upload that data, and we'll be looking at it, but we're not going to exclude you from being able to look at it at the same time. David, are you still on?
Yeah, that's correct. So we will be testing the rates and the benefits, and then releasing the QA site for you to review and provide us with an approval. And, you know, that timing is dependent upon when the issuer actually submits us the data. And as Brian said, it's just going to be rolling. You know, there'll be a queue, and we're going to process as quickly as possible, and we'll be in touch. And you know, and that's one of the reasons for the 9/3 submission deadline. We want to ensure that there's appropriate time for the carriers to do a review.
Is there any sense for when the carrier does provide these sample data about how long eHealth testing will take? Is it estimated at day, 2 days per carrier, or any estimates along those lines?
I really don't at this point. I could not commit to any deadlines or any time frames at this point.
Right. We and I apologize for that, but we really can't until we go in and do a little bit of additional analysis in terms of what we're getting. Frankly, it's going to depend on a number of factors. The simplest one being, I suspect that we're going to be able to do this more quickly for most individual plans than we are for a small group, simply because the level of the templates is somewhat different.
Okay. Can the PDFs that we are providing for the benefits be at our state plan level, displaying all the plans, or does it need to be one for each specific portal plan?
If you have, quite often an issuer will have one PDF benefit brochure that applies to all the plans or several plans, and you just need to download that one PDF. And we'll just apply it to the appropriate plans. Did that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Hang on just one
more question. We just want to confirm that the 30-day timeline for data updates is from the effective date of the change. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Which effective date are we talking about?
So in the interim final regs, it talks about carriers having to update the data on the portal within 30 days of a change, if we change benefits or we change rates.
Uh-huh.
And just want to confirm that 30-day is triggered off of the effective date of that change?
That is correct. Obviously, you know, if you can get the information in earlier to make sure that we're providing the most accurate information, then I think we should do so. But, yes, you do have the 30 days.
great. And one final question. For the admin data that we talked about at the top of this call, the number of apps, denials, and upratings, is that supposed to be comprehensive of all of our book of business or specific to the business that's coming through from the portal?
To the entire line, not just to the what's coming from the portal.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, our next question.
Paula Hafner, Capital Blue Cross. Yes, hi. We have a question about the Phase 2 submission. We still have some links that are not working on our Phase 1 submission. We're trying to get that resolved, but if that's not resolved, can that impact the Phase 2 submission?
I think the answer, and to be honest with you, I haven't actually fully considered, so we'll need to...
Why don't you ask Dwayne to answer that question?
Dwayne, can you answer that question?
Sure. The answer is no, so the analysis process that's done now through HHS will be separate than the analysis process on those URLs, it sounds like, on the e-health side. So... you should still work to resolve any URL issues you have in this next submission window, which will start August 16th through the 20th for Phase 1 for the portal updates for September 2nd. And then your URL submissions through eHealth would be handled through that analysis and quality process.
Okay. Does and when we have a template available for the test cases?
David, I believe that it's available now.
Yes, if you were to register and log on to the CMP site, one of the pages is the rate test scenarios template. It'll be an Excel template that you can download. We provide a sample of how to input that information, so that is available.
Thanks, David.
And I think someone may have already asked this, but when the test cases are due, is there a date for that?
Yeah, so that is part of the overall plan data submission package, so that should be provided prior to the issuer submitting the package.
And then the last question is, based on one of the previous questions asked about the submission, it looks like we actually aren't reviewing anything until after September 3rd. So we won't be able to check what we've submitted until after that date. Is that true?
So if, for example, you were able to provide all of the plan data as soon as next week and submitted that to us, I would expect that we would have a site for you to view that information prior to 9/3. So it all... the dependency is when the issuer is able to actually submit all of the requirements to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question.
Mark Kohlner with Regents. I think I got my question answered here. It was how often we'll be able to refresh this information, and it sounds like it would be we'll do this monthly.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question is from Lisa Berlito. Lisa, your line is open.
Hi. I just wanted to double check because I'm not quite sure that you answered this, but on the first submission, we were not supposed to submit any conversions, HIPAA, HCTC, those types of products that had conditions on them. Is that going to be the same for this next submission?
That is the same on this submission.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Chris. Your line is open.
Yes. If given the volume of data we may have to submit, would we be able to submit the individual information first so that we can start testing on that while we're submitting the group information?
Absolutely.
And we won't. Will we get an error report back or anything that says that we haven't fully complied?
No.
Or will that be contemplated?
No. So the individual submission will be separate from the small group submission. So the issuer would have to go through each one independent.
Okay.
And yes, And yes, if you have all of the data requirements loaded for the individual, by all means, submit it.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question.
Joe DiAppolito, Emblem. Hello, I'm in a New York company here, and I have a question about the definition of open for enrollment plans. I had checked on this previously with Phase 1 and was told that we would be providing benefits and rates for plans we are actively marketing, even if they had not been formally discontinued or withdrawn from the marketplace. Is that still the case? I didn't get that from your presentation.
I'm not sure I completely understand. If you are marketing a product,
I'm in New York, and if we have plans out there that have been filed approved and we have members in, but we haven't gone through the formal process of applying for to the state to have authorization to withdraw the product or to formally discontinue and move members out of the product, it's legally considered open for enrollment because it's a guaranteed issue state, and I would not be allowed to deny anybody issuing of any policy they requested that's not been withdrawn. But some of these policies haven't been sold in 6, 7, 8 years. You know, there's just members in them that at renewal they're offered a new product or into the new suite, you know, the more current up-to-date products, but they choose to stay where they are, so I can't non-renew them. But we were told previously that in those cases I didn't necessarily have to submit benefit information and pricing for all those plans.
And so this is a guaranteed issue state.
Yes. And the only way to turn around, and if someone asks to be in a plan that my cousin is in, that they bought from you, we have to issue it unless we've gone through the formal process of getting authorization from New York to withdraw it from the marketplace or to formally discontinue the product and move members into a new product, which has got huge communication and compliance issues. So, you know, but we have vehicles for telling our brokers, here's the plans that we have actively for sale and currently for sale, and it's a subset of all the filed and approved plans in the state of New York.
Right. No, and I understand. To be honest with you, there are some implications on this that I want to make sure we've thought about before I answer.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask if you wouldn't mind submitting that to us through the email help desk.
Okay, on Monday, right?
Right, and I will get you an answer.
Because we were told previously that now, if you're not actively marketing, you don't have to include them. So I opted out of a couple of plans in Phase 1 where I said we're going to opt these out of Phase 2. Right,
I understand.
But there are others out there, and you know, so now we were trying to contemplate that we need, looking at the size and the magnitude and the short time frame of this data collection effort, do I need to go out and pull all the data for all these plans that we're not actively selling?
Yeah, and I mean, like I say, there are some issues about this that I want to make sure I'm covering before I answer that.
Okay.
But do please submit it. The answer to this question will end up going into the Q&A.
Okay.
It's a very good question, and I'm sorry I can't be more specific with you now.
All right. I may have to go back down and refresh some Phase 1 data if you tell me a different answer than I got from
HHS
previously. But I'll submit it on Monday, and we'll see how it works out.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Our next question from Faith Bridges. Your line is open.
Yes, we wanted to know if the PDFs of summaries of benefits and other policy documents are required to be provided or uploaded in addition to completing the templates on benefit information.
They are required.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question from Judy Johnson. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, right now we don't have any of our individual products are approved by our Department of Commerce, and I'm wondering if we can submit those before we have approval or if we should be waiting.
Yeah, this gets back to the closed versus open and what to do with these. And I apologize because we recognize that the timing of all this is a little tricky. Our recommendation is that, and no, it's sort of what you should do is enter those plans into the system, or products rather, into the system, and go ahead and mark them as closed. For plans, if you have developed plans, our intent is to try and manage that through the product level. So, you know, it's a little tricky here, but I think the answer has to be that you should enter that information even at the plan level if you don't have it approved yet. But you should only do so if you know it's going to be approved. If we end up listing plans that you cannot sell, it's extraordinarily problematic, and we are going to be doing our very best to make sure that does not happen.
So you want us to go into the new this new submittal file, and you do want us to put them in, so into the eHealth CMP.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think for the products, and going in and entering them into the HIOS tool is something that you absolutely should do. Enter them in and mark them, if they have not been approved, as closed.
Okay.
For plan level information, I think, frankly, you may not want to include it. The downside of this is that it might not be incorporated into the tool, but we do not want to submit information that has not been approved for sale. And what I'll try to do is come up with some guidance that we can develop on this question. But for now, I'd say make sure you get it into the product, that you get it to us as a product. But for the plans, we probably should not enter it in yet.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
Our next question.
Judith Graziani, California Society of CPAs, Group Insurance Trust. Hello again. A little earlier, I asked the question regarding California MIWAs and associations.
Yes, you did.
And was instructed that we do not need to submit. We did, however, submit the initial information in phase one.
Right.
How do I delete that and not get into a problem where I'm getting continual requests, ongoing data requests, if I'm not required to submit? Because I can see that becoming a problem.
Right. No, I understand. And actually, I apologize that I wasn't clear. For the plan level, you should not submit information. We are not asking you to submit information at the plan level. For the product level, we are still trying to capture that. You should not go in and delete it.
Oh, okay.
At this point, it's marked as a closed block, correct?
I don't recall an opportunity to mark as a closed block. If there was something there, I don't recall seeing that.
The instructions at the time were to mark it as an association or a MIWA and to mark it as a closed, as not being offered in phase two.
Oh, okay. So can I go back in next week and then make those modifications?
Yes, you can and you should.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Brian, just to confirm, because this question has come up a number of times, the field in HIOS and the data collection template is actually called opt out of phase two. So for the closed blocks, your answer would be yes for that question.
Thank you.
No problem.
And we do have some updated training slides related to the HIOS tool for the product information. We will be posting those to the website as well, so you'll be able to see them. We've got them before the development team. They should be up very soon.
Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Our next question.
Henry Stasek, Blue Care Network of Michigan.
Hi, Henry.
Hello. You mentioned a bit earlier that PDFs were to be housed locally. Does this mean that PDFs will be housed on the HIOS site or on our own site?
It's actually on the servers that eHealth will be maintaining for us at the product level.
Okay, and clarification on one of the other questions. There was a question asked that all PDFs or all plan information could be submitted on one PDF. Did I understand that correctly?
I think that was the instruction. We will be, to the extent that all of the information that is required, and that is the way we are handling it. I am hoping to address the issue through any guidance if that might change, but that is what we are doing currently, yes.
So we won't have to create the separate PDFs like we did for the first submission and submit those?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Cheryl. Your line is open.
Yes, what if you do not have a SERF ID number?
Then you will not need to provide it. The vast majority will, I believe, have SERF numbers, but we understand that there will be some out there that do not.
So just leave it blank?
To be honest with you, Duane, are you there? There will be instructions on how to do it. I don't have the technical directions, but we do recognize that not every product, not every plan will have a SERF number, and I'm fairly certain we've made arrangements to handle that. If not, we will here very, very shortly.
Okay. I can speak to that as it relates to CMP. It is not a required field, so if you do not have one, you could leave it blank.
And, sorry, I was muted. The same for HIOS. It's an optional field at the product level also.
Okay. And, operator, we can only take two more questions. I apologize. I know I indicated we'd stay longer, but we've had something come up in the building. So two more questions, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there two more questions?
Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thank you. I'll make it really quick since you guys have to leave the building. In the individual market, we're guaranteed issue, but we may deny an application because the applicant is ineligible for coverage. So would we include that number in the number of denials when we report it to you guys?
I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay. Perfect. And I have a second one about the individual market. We market statewide with no geography rating. Do we enter our data just once, or is it required by zip code?
If it is covering the entire state,
yes.
Simply indicate that it covers the entire state.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. Thank you very much. And now our last call. Will?
Thank you.
Joni Wagner, Priority Health.
Hi, Joni.
Hi. I was just going to ask if you could simply repeat the website and phone number that you gave earlier in the presentation.
Absolutely. And I think David do you have it on your screen?
We're not able to access GoToMeeting.
Okay, gotcha. So the URL is https, make sure you include the S, // cmp.healthcare.gov/cmp. Okay? The email address for the portal plan level support is cmp-support@ehealth.com. And the phone number is 1-877-425-3708. All right? Yeah, and we will have the slides available. I think we send them out by email if you're on the HIOS web listserv. Additionally, they are going to be made available at the OSIO site as well. Okay? And everyone, I'm sorry, but I appreciate very much you calling in. Please, if we have not answered your question, by all means, send it to send it to us by email. By all means, if you utilize the HIOS email address, it is available immediately. They'll both be available on Monday, and you can also use any other contacts that you've been using for us if you have more immediate need. All right? Have a great afternoon. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate it. It's a tough road, but I'm glad to have you along. And have a good afternoon.
Today's call has concluded. All parties may disconnect.